This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can listen to this radio program on Pacifica stations nationwide and watch the TV version on Free Speech TV as well as on our website. President Obama, in a major national security address in early December, defended his record on war and counterterrorism. He said, quote, "No foreign terrorist organization has successfully planned and executed an attack on our homeland." He added that on January 20th, I will become the first president of the United States to serve two full terms during a time of war. Obama had used the Bush-era war authorization given by Congress in the wake of the 9/11 attacks to justify an expanded and seemingly never-ending set of wars. His office also released a report on the U.S.'s use of military force that Amnesty International's Noreen Shah said, quote, "reads like an explanation, a textbook that's left for the next person. Here are all the things you cannot do." That next person, of course, being Donald Trump. But will it be enough for a liberal Democrat who abused his executive power for destructive ends to say to an extremist Republican that now those same powers are not available? Joining me to help answer that question is Alex Emmons. He is a reporter covering national security, foreign affairs, human rights, and politics at The Intercept. Before that, he worked for Amnesty International and the ACLU on their campaigns against targeted killing, mass surveillance, and Guantanamo. Welcome to the program, Alex.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. So first, let's go through what some of these powers are that Obama granted to himself in basically extending the authority that Congress gave him to justify all manner of things. But let's focus on what he did in the international arena in terms of war.
Sure. So earlier this week, President Obama issued a report that argued to incoming President Trump that the powers of the executive to wage war overseas are limited, are narrowly circumscribed. And he argued that the president does not have the power to make war with terrorist organizations wherever he wants without congressional approval. He argued that the president does not have unlimited authority to conduct drone strikes without due process. He argued that the president really should try terror suspects in Article III courts and not in military commissions. But really, given President Obama's record on all of those issues, he has very little more authority to speak on any of those. He's currently bombing seven countries, chasing terrorist groups wherever they are with special forces. He's conducting a campaign of targeted assassination with drones that has killed even American citizens without the pretense of due process of law. And he's trying terror suspects in military commissions at Guantanamo Bay. So in addition to being highly, highly hypocritical, the report he's issuing to Trump ignores the fact that he's handing off a stack of expansive precedents that could be disastrous under a Trump administration.
Do you feel that this report was hastily put together after the election, that Obama would have been possibly perfectly happy to hand over his legacy of war fighting to Clinton?
Well, hastily put together, I don't know. But I think it is pretty obvious that President Obama was expecting to hand over these authorities to Clinton, and that Democrats who didn't object to an NSA that could read our communications, or didn't object to targeted killings, or didn't object to even things like immigration detention, were expecting them to pass into the hands of someone they trusted and not someone who has promised to use them in abusive ways.
So let's talk about what he said in this report. I mean, does he admit anywhere that he didn't actually take the advice himself that he is passing on to Trump? I mean, I'm looking at just his foreword, and he says, "Indeed, as I have consistently emphasized, what makes America truly remarkable is not the strength of our arms or our economy, but rather our founding values, which include respect for the rule of law and universal rights." But these targeted drone killings operated in such a legal gray area, others have considered them international war crimes.
Well, throughout the report, he's trying to argue that he abided by the rule of law, and quite unsuccessfully, in my opinion. In the drone section, for example, he does admit to targeting and killing U.S. citizen Anwar al-Awlaki in Yemen. But he says that that he considers U.S. citizens overseas to have due process rights. But what he doesn't mention is that he actually argued in court to prevent Anwar al-Awlaki from asserting those rights, and even argued in court afterward that courts have no role in overseeing the drone program whatsoever. So the report is kind of an act of revisionist history in that sense. He's arguing that these limitations are in place and doesn't admit to the fact that he's consistently tried to undermine them. And that's not even to mention the fact that the report doesn't even mention the other seven U.S. citizens that have been killed, whether or not they were targeted or sort of quote unquote collateral damage is an open question.
I mean, this whole handing of power to Trump with these executive powers that Obama has created comes in the context of Obama having said before the election that if you can't trust a man to have control over his own Twitter account, how are you going to trust him to be in charge of the nuclear codes? But of course, any sort of presidential authority we have ought to be prepared for the worst case scenario. I mean, surely, of course, most of us didn't expect Trump to take the helm, but to somebody being killed in, say, Pakistan, it kind of doesn't matter if it was Obama who authorized their relatives killing or Trump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and exactly. I think that gets to the heart of the matter, is that Democrats really have no moral authority to say that we trust the NSA under Obama, but not under Trump. That's an inconsistent position. And even if you do trust the person in office, eventually someone Nixonian or someone who could abuse those powers is going to be elected. I think the framers in the Constitution paid a great deal of attention to whether or not the powers they were giving the president, not only would they be abused, but could they be abused. And I think that same type of scrutiny needs to be applied to things like the ability to unilaterally start bombing a terrorist group in a remote region of the world, or conducting drone killings, military detention, NSA surveillance, any of that. We need to think not only about whether it would be abused in the foreseeable future, but whether it could be abused in the distant future. And unfortunately for us, the distant future has come a bit faster than most people anticipated.
What does President Obama say in this report specifically about the mass surveillance, if at all? I mean, is this something he addresses? Because the idea of mass surveillance is rooted in homeland security against, you know, homegrown terrorist threats.
The report didn't talk about mass surveillance that much. Obama did talk about it a little bit in his speech yesterday. But again, I think it's a similar idea. It is a legal authority, an executive power that has grown out of a military situation that Obama had a chance to de-escalate. He had a chance to wind down Bush's warrantless wiretapping program, and instead he escalated it. He dramatically enhanced the amount of data the NSA was collecting on foreigners and on U.S. citizens. And he, by giving it that kind of bipartisan stamp of approval, now it becomes very, very difficult to say that someone like Trump shouldn't have those authorities.
Could Obama have issued this report 4 years ago, 6 years ago, or even 2 years ago?
Well, the report is mostly a compilation of previous statements, of previous Justice Department opinions. So a lot of it has been issued, you know, at various points over time. But yeah, it certainly would have been preferable to see Obama try and more clearly define many of the standards that he was operating under. I mean, he in this report, he sort of brags about his own transparency in setting out these standards that he's acting under. But many of the standards, targeted killings comes to mind, many of the legal standards around that only came to public light as a result of the efforts of activists or of leakers or of lawsuits. So Obama,
so he was forced to be as transparent as he has been.
Exactly. He brags about transparency, but in so many of these cases that he's been forced to be this transparent. And so, again, I think that speaks to a dimension of hypocrisy.
Now, on this issue of the president's authority to oversee kill lists and to, you know, have these targeted killings, could President Obama revoke the power that he has given himself? If so, couldn't a President Trump simply get them back?
Well, the answer is no. President Obama couldn't revoke those powers. The few limitations that he has set on his own authority to conduct targeted killings are entirely a matter of policy, of presidential directive, and could be unsigned by President Trump on day one. President Obama argues that the legal authority to conduct what he calls targeted killings or direct assassinations, whatever you want to call them, he argues that that legal authority comes from his inherent responsibility to protect this country against imminent attack. And, you know, obviously he's using a loose definition of imminence, given that some of these people are on kill lists for years before they're actually taken out. But because that's his legal argument, he can't now deny that Trump has that legal authority.
How much of the Bush administration and the Bush era practices and wars did Obama end up continuing, given that Obama essentially distinguished or attempted to distinguish himself from President Bush? You know, there was this huge wave of anger against the Bush era. Anybody but Bush became a rallying cry in the lead up to the election that that ended up with President Obama. But it seems as though President Obama actually built on the edifice of war powers that Bush started.
In some cases, yes, and in some cases it's different. And we have to give credit where credit is due. I mean, President Obama did ban torture, and he deserves credit for that.
Right, and we should mention that Trump has actually talked about bringing back things like waterboarding.
Exactly. And in other ways, it's different, too. President Obama does deserve credit for bringing home the vast majority of U.S. troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. But in other ways, he's expanded U.S. wars, sort of on the precedent that, you know, as long as we have a very small military footprint on the ground and as long as we're just bombing countries, then we can sort of bomb wherever we want without much debate or congressional authorization. So it's different, but we have to give credit where credit is due, I think.
And then Trump in the campaign repeatedly called Obama out and Hillary when she was Secretary of State for being hawkish on war. What do you expect Trump, who's going to have these expanded powers because of Obama, what do you expect him to do? On the home front, things will likely be quite different because his paranoia seems to sort of drive the possible abuse of power in terms of surveillance. But on the international front, do you expect a President Trump to expand on what Obama has done?
Well, when it comes to wars overseas, it's very difficult to know actually what he does, what he says, what he believes, what he's going to do are all, you know, probably different things. It's hard to know what he really wants to do. He said he wants to bomb the expletive out of terror groups. But at the same time, he's also said that all of our war efforts in the Middle East have all been a disaster and we've just spent money pointlessly and killed a lot of people. Who really knows how to reconcile those statements? I'm not even sure he does. I think it's going to depend on the people he surrounds himself with. And so far, there are some non-encouraging signs. I mean, it's been reported that he's considering former UN Ambassador John Bolton, who has openly called for war with Iran. So I think a lot of it remains to be seen, and we shouldn't put the cart before the horse and blame him for things he's not done yet.
What do you make of Michael Flynn, the person he's named to be his national security advisor? And a side note, of course, that Michael Flynn Jr., his son, has just been taken off the transition team for tweeting these baseless conspiracies about the Clintons' involvement in a child sex trafficking ring.
Well, it's alarming. I mean, Michael Flynn, essentially, since leaving DIA, has become kind of a professional Islamophobe. And it's more than a little bit alarming that someone like that will have the ear of President Trump in such a high-profile way. I think there have been a number of other examples. Someone named Catherine Gorka has been brought on to head his transition efforts for the Department of Homeland Security, or to be on the landing team. And she as well is someone who circulates these sort of Muslim conspiracy theories that you know, CARE is a puppet organization of Hamas or something. And it's absolutely, it's a terrifying time to be a part of, you know, Muslim American community in this country. And getting back to your earlier question, you know, President-elect Trump has promised, has said we need to spy more on mosques. He said he's open to the idea of a Muslim registry. He said that, you know, he wants to, you know, deport children of immigrants who are born here. He said he wants to ban Muslims from this country. I think it's not alarmist to say that many of these minority groups have real reasons to be concerned for their rights and safety.
So let's actually focus on that then, this issue of what to expect internally here in the United States. Thanks to Edward Snowden, we now know the huge extent to which the public is routinely surveilled by the government. We also see President Obama having very aggressively prosecuted journalists and whistleblowers, journalists like James Rise and whistleblowers like Jeffrey Sterling, and of course Chelsea Manning, to the fullest extent of the law under the guise of the Espionage Act. It feels like Trump might be even more might be more likely to be frightening on that front rather than the international front. His son-in-law, Jared Kushner, just published an op-ed saying that anti-Trump protests should be investigated by the FBI under Obama.
Yeah, it's absolutely alarming. I mean, if there's one thing that is consistent about what Mr. Trump says, it is that he really does hate the press. And so, you know, someone who has made a career out of frivolous lawsuits, defamation lawsuits, once he gets the investigatory power of the Department of Justice, who knows what he'll do. But that's another example of an area in which President Obama's precedent is going to be potentially disastrous. On the NSA issue, you know, not only has President Obama dramatically expanded the amount of data the NSA collects on Americans, he's undermined attempts for courts to review its programs. He's argued in court multiple times that that citizens who cannot prove they are being spied upon by these classified programs can't challenge them. And it's nearly impossible to prove you're being spied on by a secret program. So that precedent is definitely going to come back to haunt Americans.
Well, Alex, it seems as though you and The Intercept have your work cut out for you under Trump. I want to wish you the best of luck. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll post links to your articles from our website that reference the materials we've been talking about today. My guest is Alex Emmons, a reporter with The Intercept, where he covers national security, foreign affairs, human rights, and politics. Before The Intercept, he worked at Amnesty International and the ACLU on their campaigns against targeted killing, mass surveillance, and Guantanamo. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can sign up for our newsletter at risingupwithsonali.com to get daily emails with links to all our stories.